Shalom Aleichem, everybody, and good evening. Welcome and thank you so much for joining us again for our second shiur in our Torah Demystified series, exploring the wide world of Torah. Tonight, we are going to be talking about the topic of dreams. The title of tonight's shiur is, While You Were Sleeping, What Dreams Really Mean. So, when we talk about dreams, of course, we all have probably lots to say and to think and our own opinions and what we think we know about dreams. Before we talk about the Torah perspective on dreams, I wanted to spend a couple of minutes just talking about what dreams are, how we can best define them. So a dream is defined by the American Heritage Dictionary as a succession of images, ideas, emotions, and sensations that usually occur involuntarily in the mind during certain stages of sleep. So that is somewhat of a broad definition of a dream. But I think that's probably a definition that we could all agree on. Humans spend about 2 hours dreaming per night, and each dream lasts around 5 to 20 minutes. Now, most of us, even if we remember our dreams from time to time, we don't necessarily know and have any cognitive awareness as to how long our dreams last and how often we dream. So based on studies, this is what we are being told. Believe it or not, there is actually an institute called the Sleep Health Foundation. I don't really know anything about them. But what I like is that on their website, they have several interesting facts about dreaming, which I also thought would be a good way to sort of begin our conversation tonight. Number one, we all dream every night. Our brains are active throughout the night, but after we wake up, we often don't remember much about our dreams. So most of us do not necessarily remember our dreams on a regular basis, but yet we are being told by the Sleep Health Foundation that we all dream every night. Number two, we dream most vividly during REM, rapid eye movement. Some of our sleep has vivid, structured thoughts or dreams. These occur during a stage of sleep that is called REM sleep. This sleep occurs in short episodes across each night, around 90 minutes apart, and our longer dreams are in the morning hours. Number three, we are especially wired not to act out our dreams. During REM sleep, many of our muscles relax completely, and this prevents us from acting out our dreams. If the system didn't work properly, we may try to act out our dreams, especially if the dreams involve strong emotions. So that's a good thing. Number four, many dreams are bizarre because part of our brain shuts down. When we are awake, the front part of our brain controls how we make sense of the world. This shuts down during dreaming. Because of this, the dreaming brain puts together ideas that normally do not go together. Number five, most dreams relate to recent awake experiences. This is something we're going to touch on a little later when we see some of the classical traditional Jewish sources talk about what dreams are and where they come from. So we are being told over here that dreams are often linked to real-life events from the past. Usually, these are events or thoughts from 1 or 2 days before the dream. Number six, we dream in pictures. About two-thirds of dreams are mainly visual, with fewer that involve sounds, movement, taste, or smell. Color is only in about one-third of all dreams. It has been said that when we are awake, we think in ideas, but when asleep, we think in pictures. Number seven, we can learn to control our dreams. Many people have bad dreams or nightmares. These can happen over and over again, but people could change these events in their dreams and they can be less frightening. We can write down memories of a scary dream, and after this, we can think how it may end differently. And finally, scientists disagree about the meaning of dreams, and so do Chazal, as we're going to see in a moment. Some people say that dreams mean nothing. They say that we have only part of our brains that are stimulated when we sleep. Other people say that they have value. They say that's kind of a therapy for when we're feeling down. Having and remembering vivid dreams about stressful things in our life may help us deal with stress. Many people think that dream contains messages, but the evidence for this is weak. So this is, like I said, according to the Sleep Health Foundation, these are 8 interesting facts about dreams. But tonight, of course, we're going to focus on dreaming from a Torah perspective. So the first thing I'd like to talk about is dreams in the Torah. Do we find examples of dreams in the Torah? And of course, we all know the answer to that question. Of course we do. I'm going to highlight several of the most famous, significant dreams that are found in the Torah. The first one I want to share with you comes from Parshas Vayetze, which we read a few months ago, a very significant dream, where the Torah records that when Yaakov Avinu was, of course, escaping from his brother Esav, he goes to sleep, and he dreams of a sulam mutzav arza, of a ladder that is that spans from the ground all the way up to the heavens, Varosh Magi Hashemayimah, the Ramalachim. And when Yaakov wakes up, the Torah tells us Vayikatz Yaakov Mishnaso Vayomer, and he said, Achen Yesh Hashem Amakom Hazev Anachi Lo Yadati. He had a vision in his dream, and that vision was so powerful that he woke up and he realized that he was in a very, very special place. The Torah describes that he had a sense of awe and great reverence for that place. And he said, Ein Zekim Beis Elokim V'Zeh Shar Shamayim, and it dedicates this place, the place that, as we know, would ultimately become the Makom HaMikdash. Later on in that parasha, the Torah tells us that Yaakov dreams again. Only this time, his dream is a little bit different. He's dreaming about animals. He's dreaming, if you will, about his material possessions. But there we find that Yaakov Avinu was someone who was a dreamer. And perhaps it's for that reason, we're not going to talk about this now, why his son Yosef, who was also obviously someone who had not only the capacity to dream, but understood dreams on a very, very intimate level. He was a dream interpreter, which ultimately gave him the ability to go ahead and to rise to power in Mitzrayim. So perhaps this is one of the things that connected Yaakov and Yosef in a very meaningful way. The Torah tells us, of course, this makes up a major section of the beginning of Parshas Miketz, that Paro was a dreamer. The Torah tells us that Avimelech is visited by God in a dream. Bilam. Now this is an interesting mix of people. Of course, not everybody on this list are among the most righteous people in the world. Some of them include our Avos, and others, if you will, the greatest Rishoyim and villains within the Torah. But yet, they all experience dreams which the Torah tells us about, and seem to contain a lot of significance. So do dreams matter? What do they mean when we dream? So going back to the first example that I shared with you, the Torah's example in Parshas Vayetze, it's very clear, using this as an example, and it's not the only example, that this dream really mattered, because Yaakov wakes up from this dream, and he realizes he's in this very special place, and that directs his focus is an attention, not just for the moment, but really one could argue for all of history. So there's an example of a dream that really matters. We find later on in the Torah, Parshas Baloscha, when Aaron and Miriam are engaged in some conversation about Moshe Rabbeinu, and it would seem, even though we don't know all the details of what exactly was said, it would seem that they were somewhat skeptical as to what exactly Moshe was superior in his ability to prophesy. After all, they were also prophets. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes them aside and lectures them as to why Moshe Rabbeinu was in fact unique, different than all the other prophets who had preceded and followed Moshe. And over there the Torah tells us, Vayomer, Hashem said to Aaron and Moshe, Aaron and Miriam, Shimun Adavarai, listen to me very carefully. Im Yenevi Achem Hashem, when God chooses to speak to a prophet, I appear to him in a vision, and I will speak to him in a dream. The Torah is declaring that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu speaks to prophets other than Moshe Rabbeinu, because in context over there, Moshe was being recognized as being someone who's different. We're not going to talk about that right now. But other than Moshe Rabbeinu, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu communicates to prophets, they are in some sort of meditative state. Either they are unconscious on some level in some sort of trance, or as the Torah says, bachalom, in a dream. They're sleeping. So the exchanges that are recorded in the Torah between Hashem and all the other prophets, again, those who preceded and followed Moshe, these messages are often communicated in a dream. And perhaps that's what inspires Chazal to teach us. The Gemara in Brachos, Daf Nun Zayin Amid Beis, at the end of Maseches Brachos, the Gemara for several pages talks a lot about dreams. If you want to know what Chazal have to say about dreams, you will find many, many of the most fascinating sugyas and discussions in the Gemara about dreams at the end of Maseches Brachos. We're going to reference several of them tonight, but there's certainly a lot more, so I encourage you to take a look. One of the comments that the Gemara says over there is Chalom Echad Bishishim L'Nevuah, that a dream is 1/60th of a prophecy. Now, whenever we speak about something being 1 in 60, the most familiar example of that, of course, as we know, when it comes to the concept of bittul, when something is batel b'shishim, that's a milk that falls into a chalent pot. So we want to know if there's bittul. What's the idea of echad mishishim? Echad mishishim means it's a very, very small amount of something, something which is very heavily diluted, but there's something there. There's a trace of it. So Chazal tell us that a dream, while it may not necessarily be a full-blown prophecy, after all, not everybody's a prophet, even though we all dream, but it does contain, or maybe we'll say it may contain, a small trace of a nevuah. And we're going to talk about this more a little later. On the other hand, there's a pasuk in the Navi Zechariah Ki atrafim dibru oven, vakosmim chazu sheker. The Navi says that when it comes to idols and sorcerers, they're speaking falsehood, and there's no substance to their remarks, their words, their ideas. Vachalomos hashav yedaberu. Their dreams, so they are null. They are meaningless. They have no import. They're insignificant. Hevel yenachemun. Akei nasu kemot son yanu ki ein roeh. That they give sort of meaningless, vain comfort. And so therefore, describing over here the people who follow, be it in the ways of the truff and the kosmim chalomos, they're like wandering sheep without a shepherd. So in this pasuk, you seem to get the very strong impression that dreams are completely insignificant. We shouldn't be paying attention to these dreams, as the pasuk says, v'chalomos hashav yidaberu. So maybe one way we can understand this, or we can sort of resolve this, is by pointing out that not all dreams are the same. Rabbeinu Bechai, in his commentary on in the beginning of Parshas Miketz, you'll find, by the way, many Mepharshim will talk about dreams, do so, interestingly, in the beginning of Parshas Miketz, not earlier, where, as I shared already, we have dreams that are recorded earlier, but specifically Parah's dreams. And the big focus that the Torah has around Parah's dreams and Yosef's interpretation, it prompts long discussions in the Mepharshim. I refer to the Barbanel as well, who I didn't bring here on the sheet, but has a very, very lengthy discussion about dreams, a very, very fascinating set of essays that it's kedai to see inside. Rabbeinu Bechai says over here, you know, that dreams are not all the same, and they come from different places. And he says there could basically be three triggers, if you will, for a dream. One of them could be ma'achalim, which means food, and b'bnei ha'machshavos, which means one's thoughts, and b'bnei chizuk ha'nefesh, which we'll say means from the strength of the soul. So the first one, he says, is when it comes to foods. He says that foods, the food that we eat has the capacity to affect us. It affects us not only physiologically, but it affects our mind, our moods, our emotions. And he basically says when people eat a lot, maybe heavy foods before they go to sleep, it will affect their sleep quality, and it may affect their dreams a lot as well. And so therefore, if you have certain eating habits, just be aware, says Rabbeinu Bechai, that it may actually affect your dreams. Secondly, he points out that there are dreams that evolve from what a person thinks about during the day. When a person is focused on a certain task, if a person is working on a certain project, in this case, I give you a picture of a person who's studying, whatever it is, studying for a big exam, or really, really immersed in a certain sugya, whatever the case may be. I don't necessarily mean only a sugya in Torah, but that as well. So they may carry those thoughts with them when they go to sleep at night. And he quotes the pasuk from Daniel, Rayonach ha-mishkavach saliku, that your thoughts, you sort of take them with you to your bed. That the things that we think about during the day tend to appear in some form when we sleep at night. But then he says, there's another type of dream. And that is that a chalom, which is bam mibnei chizuk ha-nefesh. And this he says, hu amiti haroi mikulam shimikochas ha-nefesh. When we are speaking about dreams that contain reflections of a certain truth, these are the dreams that we are talking about. These are dreams that are coming deep from, bedded from within a person's soul. And the way he describes it, and we're going to see others who describe it similarly, when a person is awake during the day, so we are distracted. We live in a physical world. We are physical beings. And there's a lot of noise. And I mean that literally, but maybe in a more figurative sense. There are many, many things that distract us. When we go to sleep at night, and our body goes into, you know, what we would call sleep mode, and the physical part of the body just sort of retires on a certain level, it allows for an emergence of the soul, a certain awareness of the soul, which is able to sort of detect, to connect to certain, like waves. You know, we have like radio waves, and of course there are all sorts of waves that are going through the world today that we're just not aware of. We don't have the antenna, we don't have the kalim to detect them, to connect with them. But when we go to sleep at night, so it is possible. And he says that basically you can have dreams that are being triggered by what a person eats, by what a person's thinking about. But it also, for certain individuals, they are able to really tap into something which is very powerful. So when we ask the question of whether dreams mean things or not, the answer is it may depend. It may depend on what type of dream it is and where it's coming from. The Gemara in Brachos, Daf Nehemiah Beis, again from the end of Brachos, tells us something very interesting. Shmuel, ki avechazi chal mabisha. When Shmuel would have a bad dream, Omar, he would say, v'chalomos hashav yedaberu. He would quote the pasuk that we saw in Zechariah that, dreams don't mean anything. But ki avechazi chal matalba, tava, when he had a good dream, he would say, "V'chalomos Hashem yidaberu." V'aksiv, the pasuk says, "V'chalom adaber bo." In other words, Shmuel seemed to, you know, try to sort of have it both ways. When he had a bad dream, he would dismiss it and say, dreams don't mean anything like the Navi Zechariah says. When he would have a good dream, a dream that gave him a certain sense of chizuk, something that gave him hope, so then he would say, b'chalom adaber bo, maybe HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving me some sort of prophecy, if you will, if not a full prophecy, as we saw, you know, a 60th or some trace of a prophecy. Now, what's Shmuel doing over here? So you could say it's possible that he's just, you know, he's the ultimate optimist. You know, when things are looking good, so he says, this is great. And when things aren't looking so good, he says, don't worry about it. Doesn't mean all that much. That could be. It could also be that Shmuel understood and appreciated, as we just said, that not all dreams are the same. Not all dreams are the same. And so therefore, he preferred to take the attitude that, you know, when I'm having a good dream, I prefer to think that this is something that is particularly meaningful. When I have a dream that is more concerning, or as the Gemara says, a chalma bisha, what we would call a nightmare, a bad dream, so he would be a little more dismissive. It is also possible, by the way, that Shmuel understood that, which I think many of us understand today, and that is that, to a certain extent, we determine whether our dreams come true. Now, not entirely, but partially, because dreams can be very inspiring, they can be very motivating. A person can have a dream, and that may give them a sense of hope, of inspiration. It may give them an idea. A person can have very creative thoughts when dreaming and decide, you know what, I'm going to take that. I'm going to run with it. And is able to essentially achieve what we call a self-fulfilling prophecy. So it could be that Shmuel's attitude was simply, when I have a good dream, I really, really want to sort of take that as far as I can. When I have a bad dream, I'd rather sort of dismiss it. The same Gemara tells that Rava raised what he thought was a contradiction between these two psukim. Rami, he says, wait a second, there's a contradiction over here. It says, v'chalom adaber bo, which would seem to indicate that God speaks to us through dreams, so therefore dreams matter. Uksiv, but the pasuk says, v'chalom ashashav yidaberu, that they're false. And then he said, lo kasha, well, really, there's no contradiction over here. Kana yidei malach v'kana yidei shade. One is when there's a dream that's coming through a malach, which we would normally translate as an angel. And kana yidei shade, the other type of dream, is a dream that is coming through a shade, which we translate often as a demon. Now, we could understand this Gemara on its most face level, and that is that we're talking over here about dreams that are literally delivered to us by different means. If it comes through a malach, then we assume that it's, you know, sort of a message from God. And if it's coming from a shade, it's coming from, if you will, from the dark side, it's coming from another place, so then we dismiss it. But many Mefarshim actually try to understand this a little bit deeper. One example, and I didn't give you the entire quote because it's long and a little bit complicated, but I just tried to take the Tamtamsis, but I gave you the source. You can take a look inside. Rabbi Yosef Albo in the Sefer HaIkrim teaches the following. When the Gemara says Malach, what it means is, this is referring to a force within inside of us that is our intellectual side. The Koach HaDibri, or the koach hasichli. A shade is what is called the koach hamedame, which is the part of us that just enjoys engaging in silly fantasies and imagination. Who says, ukfishir has gabrus hakoach hasichli, to the extent that a person is able to focus their mind and to use their intellectual kochos, al koach hamedame, and to override the tendency that we have to become enamored with things that are really, really just fantasy, that aren't real. A person can prepare oneself for nevuah. Now, again, we're not in the business of trying to become prophets, but the idea over here is that I can become somebody who's roi for a certain greater connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu if I focus my mind in this, like we're calling this sichli yedikas, using my intellectual abilities to focus my mind in a productive way. I'll mention, by the way, I remember reading a couple of years ago, or hearing a couple of years ago, that the CEO of Netflix, I don't know his name, was asked who his greatest competitor is. Because as we know, Netflix really, they have a major, major market share of streaming videos, which is a very, very big, big, multi-billion, maybe trillion-dollar service. It's a big, big industry. So they asked him, who's your number one competitor? And he gave a very clever answer, which is really rather tragic. He said, my number one competitor is sleep, because he recognizes that that's who he's competing with. If it wasn't necessary for people to sleep, then he'd be able to, to be that much bigger, that much greater. The reality is that a lot of people, before they go to sleep at night, so they're using their minds in ways that ultimately, at best, but they will bring about dreams that are, at least according to the way Rabbi Yosef Abba explains over here, are dreams that are delivered by a shade, as opposed to coming from a malach. The Aruch HaShulchan has a similar type of explanation. He says, Isha Shehu Tohor, a person who's a pure person, and engages in Torah study and is a God-fearing person, and they're not going to sleep, once again, like you said beforehand, with a full belly. Hachalom shel ish kazeh vada yesh bo mamish. The dreams of this person certainly have substance. Without a doubt that this person is being given a glimpse into some very, very great spiritual ideas. But he says people who involve themselves completely and immerse themselves in the hevle ashtus of olam hazeh, which completely, he calls them shadim, because to show the matzlachas adam amitis, because they deny, they deprive, they steal a person away from true opportunities in life. Such dreams are completely insignificant. So now we're going to talk a little bit about bad dreams in halacha. Every once in a while we have bad dreams. It happens to everyone. Some of us dream more than others. We have more bad dreams than others. We all have bad dreams. So how do we view a bad dream from a halachic perspective? So the Gemara in Brachos, once again, from that same Sugid Nun Hemibes, tells us that if a person has a dream, v'lo yada mayhu, he doesn't know what it was, and the impression you seem to get over here is that it was an upsetting. It was an upsetting dream to this person, and he doesn't know exactly what he saw. So what he should do is he should leikum kamikani beidna de parsi yadayu. He should go to shul, or he should go in front of the kohanim at the time that they do birchas kohanim. And there's a tefillah that should be said. And this tefillah we may be familiar with. It comes from the Gemara, but the tefillah, we see it in our siddur, in the machzor. Whenever we have birchas kohanim, you'll see printed inside this tefillah, Ribbono shel Olam. And the person goes on to say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, listen, ani shelach v'chalom osai shelach. I am yours, so to speak. I belong to you. My dreams belong to you. I had a dream and I don't know what it means. And I'm praying to you, Hashem, that all the dreams that I have and the dreams that other people have and dreams that I have about myself or about other people have about me. So he says, Im tovim heim, chaz kem v'yamtsim. If the dream is good, if be'etzem, the dream is a good dream, so I ask that you strengthen it, that you give it the koach to thrive and to survive. And regarding me and them, the dream should have a certain fulfillment like Yosef HaTzadik. However, and this is going to raise questions in your mind right now, we'll get to this a little later, in Tzrichem Refua, if the dreams need healing, if they need a sort of a cure, so you should heal the dreams like you healed Chizkiyo, Melech Yehuda, and Miriam and Aviyah Mitzarato, who had Saras, and Naaman from his Saras, Kamei Mara Yidei Moshe Rabbeinu, Kamei Yericho Yidei Elisha. We're citing all these examples where a certain cure, an intervention was necessary. And over here we're saying, if the dream is a bad dream, please cure it, provide an intervention. Ukeshem shahafachta eskilas bilam arashim iklal levracha, kein ta'afok kol chamosai alayvi al koyis alatova. Just like you transformed Bilam's klala, his curse, into a blessing, so too you should transform all my dreams and all the dreams of all the Jewish people, Latova. This is a very, very strange prayer. There are so many questions that this raises over here. All the whole concept over here. Well, if my dream is a good dream, so you should strengthen it. If it's a bad one, so it needs a refuah. And if it needs a refuah, we give all these examples of people who were able to tap into refuah. And the whole idea of transforming the dreams like the Kilas Bilam, very, very strange. So what you do see from the Gemara is clearly if a person has a dream, and it's an upsetting dream, and it's a concerning dream, it doesn't know what it means, that is something to be concerned about. You should go to shul and you should daven for a refuah. You should daven for a good outcome. The Gemara in Shabbos that Yeralev teaches, Amar Rav b'machz, Amar Rav Chama bar Guria, Yaf etanes lechalom ke'esh l'na'ores, that a tanis, that a fast, can be an effective way of neutralizing, if you will, the effects of a dream, ke'esh l'na'ores. But the way it works, the way it operates, is it has to be applied immediately. It can't be, means like the way a fire, when it comes in contact with very flammable material, it can be effective, but it has to be applied right away. Amar v'chizda b'bayom, you have to fast that day, v'am Rabbi Yosef afilu b'shabbos, even on Shabbos. And this is recorded in Shulchan Aruch. Mutter l'sanus bal b'tanus chalom. What's a mutter? Normally, you're not allowed to fast on Shabbos. The Mechaber Paskins in Shulchan Aruch that if you have a bad dream on Friday night, you're allowed to fast on Shabbos. Kadesh yikra gzaydino, because this will hopefully, again, like I said, neutralize the effects of the dream, and person will have a kriyas gzar din. And then it says that you have to fast again on Sunday in order to be mechaper for the fact that you fasted on Shabbos, because normally you're not supposed to fast Shabbos. If you can't fast for 2 days in a row, okay, so you make up for another time. The Mishnah Berurah points out over there, it's not just fasting. A person should engage in tefillah and in other forms of tshuva. A person should say dvidoy. In other words, you should take a bad dream seriously. The Mishnah Berurah also quotes from the Taz, that, and we saw this already a little bit. Now listen, if I was reading a very, very, very scary book before I went to sleep on Friday night, which is probably not the best reading ever, but especially not on Lel Shabbos, and then I had a nightmare, and in the nightmare I saw visions that were similar to what I was reading in the book. So he says, it's probably not coming min hashamayim. He says, this is just you're carrying your thoughts with you into your dreams. And this is not something you need to be concerned about. The Shulchan Aruch in the next halacha in Siv Hei says, Yesh Omrim, there are those that say, because you see sort of the tension among the Rishonim over here, that you should not fast at Tanis Chalom on Shabbos. Unless it's a dream that you had three times. What's the idea of a dream you had three times? So, listen, once it could be nothing. Twice it could be nothing. Three times already. Now, one said that, you know, if you get a call on your phone and you don't recognize the number, it says unknown number, unknown caller. So many people, if you don't know who it is, you're not going to pick it up. When it calls again, yeah, I could pick it up. Third time already, you start to wonder what's going on over here. You got to pick it up. You wonder what's going on. So I don't know what the dream means, but I've gotten it third time in it, three times in a row. Maybe that's a reason to be concerned. But then he says, another opinion says, today we don't do this at all. Why? Because we don't really know what dreams mean. We don't know how to interpret your dreams. We don't even know how to interpret what we're feeling when we wake up in the morning. So we don't need to be concerned about it. Then the Mechaber says, but we do have a tradition. There are certain types of dreams that if you have these dreams, they're concerning. They include a person who dreams, God forbid, that a Sefer Torah is burning, or dreams about Yom Kippur B'Shas Ni'ilah, of course, Beso, Oshin of Shenaflu, a person dreams that the beams of his house or his teeth are falling out, or maybe seeing Yom Kippur, even not B'Shas Ni'ilah. All these dreams that are listed over here, these are very, very specific types of visions and dreams. And there's a tradition that we have that if these are the dreams that you see, so these actually should be taken seriously, even on Shabbos. And the Mishnah Berurah says, sort of again, last word over here, and even these, you shouldn't fast on Shabbos. Again, for the reasons that we mentioned, that who knows, it could be nothing. Unless, he says, unless you're so upset that you had this dream, that fasting will give you greater oneg than eating. Meaning, normally, for most people, they enjoy eating and they don't enjoy fasting. But if your enjoyment of Shabbos has already been so stared by this dream, and you're very, very worried, and you don't know what it means, and you're concerned, and you're nervous, and so therefore the only way you're going to be able to have somewhat of an enjoyable Shabbos is by fasting in order to know that you're doing something. Okay, so in that situation, that's what you should do. But what you see over here, especially, and there is somewhat of a chronological progression over here, is that while we do have a tradition from the Talmud that dreams could be very significant, you should be worried about them, and you should be concerned about them, as time goes on, you see that through the ages of the Rishonim and later Achronim, we're concerned that people who have dreams don't really, we have no way of knowing whether a bad dream is a bad dream, a good dream is a good dream, we don't know dreams, and so therefore you don't have to take it all that seriously. Now going back to what we said before, there was an idea in the Tefillah that the Gemara says, the idea of healing a dream. Right, so we saw over there, this is just, you see on your screen the same tefillah that we saw beforehand. The Gemara Brachu says that a person should say, if my dream is a good dream, imtovim heim, chazkem yamsim, strengthen them. And it should be like the dreams of Yosef Tzadik. But if it needs a refuah, if it needs to be healed, if it needs a cure, so heal me or heal my dream. And you should be hofech, you should transform the dream like you transformed the klala of Bilam, HaRasha, into a bracha. So what exactly does this mean? So there's a beautiful essay that is found in the Sefer Shu'urei Das. Obviously, I don't have time right now to share the entire essay. Certainly not. But I wanted to just share with you the substance of the sort of the main point of how Rabbi Yosef Yehuda Leib Lach, who was the previous Rosh Yeshiva that tells Yeshiva, he explains this. It's a very, very beautiful idea. He basically says, you know, when we live in a world in which we think, we live like we see things in the past, present, and future. And we live in the present, we see that everything that's happening right now is happening, and if something's happened in the past, and if it didn't happen yet, it didn't happen yet. And those are sort of three separate domains. What we don't always appreciate and we don't understand is the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu conducts his world and runs the world is that there are things that are set in motion and they're sort of coming our way. They haven't yet come to complete fulfillment in the way we see it in our own experience, but even though it hasn't happened yet, to a certain extent, it is the present. It's not merely something that's going to happen in the future. It's something that sort of happened already, but it hasn't really fully come to fruition. I'll give a mashal, which he doesn't give, and it's not a perfect mashal. But if a person gets infected and has a certain bacterial infection, they're already sick. They just may not have any symptoms yet, but it's already there. And so therefore, this bacteria is going through their bloodstream, and at a certain point, they're going to start to feel certain symptoms, and they're going to realize they're sick, and they're going to deal with it. But the truth of the matter is they were sick already beforehand, they just didn't realize. So using that mashal for a moment, what he basically explains is that there are things that are set in motion. And when if something happens to me, it could very well be, very often, that happened to me already beforehand, it just didn't make its way here. And so therefore, he says that when a person is awake during the day, most of us are not wired. We don't have the ability to go ahead and to sort of tap into these frequencies that are coming from literally from like a different place. We'll say like a different universe, a different domain, the spiritual domain. But he says when a person is sleeping at night and their body separates on a certain level from the soul or the soul from the body, and it's not shkua legami b'mizgeres hachomer kamo b'hekitz, and the person is not as immersed in the physical world, so then it's possible for the soul to detect, to see that there are certain things that are happening which may be concerning to me. So the way he basically explains this is the reason we should be concerned about a dream and the whole concept of it coming back to a refuah and the hafichas klal of Bilam is that it's happened already. When I dream about something, the idea of being a refuah is that I've just given like a little bit of a preview of something that's just coming down the line. Maybe it's going to happen today, maybe in a day or two, but we're concerned, not necessarily, but possibly this is something which is already set in motion. And so therefore the only option at this point is not to say it shouldn't happen, but there should be a refuah. Even though the Gezar Din, let's say, can't be withdrawn, but the circumstances can change. I could alter my position. I can prove myself in some way, so maybe I can sort of dodge that. And again, I'm speaking in all these metaphors, partially because I don't really understand what I'm saying myself. But the idea is that the idea of a refuah for a dream is that we shouldn't see a dream as being a prophecy in the sense that, oh, I had a vision of something that will happen in the future. We're not Nevi'im. Maybe the concept of Echad Meshishim Nevuah is that it's happened already. We're getting a little bit of a glimpse of something that's going to happen very, very shortly thereafter. And that's why we're asking for sort of this transformation. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave Bilam the capacity to go ahead and curse anyone but Klal Yisrael, so Bilam was given that capacity. And so therefore, when he utters the curse, there's a certain metzias. There's built into Teva, there's a certain consequence to that. And so therefore, all that can happen is that koach of a klala was transformed into a koach of a bracha. But not that it could, not that it should be stopped, or not that it should be obstructed, or not that it could be deflected, because this, after all, was the koach that he had. What about the halachic consequence of dreams? What do I mean by that? So here's a fascinating sugya, a stira of sorts in the Shulchan Aruch Hasina moment. The Gemara in Sanhedrin says as follows. If a person is upset because he knows that his father had a lot of money, his father died, and he doesn't know where the money is. He has no idea. So he knows that his father had, let's say, a treasure chest full of gold, but his father did not leave any instructions, any information. He didn't leave a will. So the son has no idea what it is. And then Bab Achalom. And then he has a dream. And in the dream, someone comes and it says, Kach v'kachin, here's how much money you have. But Makom Plonia, he says, I'll tell you exactly where it is. If you go in the backyard and you take 10 steps to the right and go to the third tree, and then go take a little step. So you look and you undo the rocks and you'll see, you'll discover this gold. So he says, that's where it is. But he says, I got to tell you, it's not yours. Shel Maaser Sheni Hein. It belongs to someone else. It was designated for Maaser Sheni. You could say the same thing for Staka. So Zehoya Maisa, says the Gemara, this actually happened. It was a guy who had no idea where his money was. He goes to sleep. A Bala Chalom comes and appears to him, tells him where the money is, but tell him it's not yours. So the Maisa came with a Chachamim and they say, if a person has a dream like this, it doesn't matter. You can ignore it. It doesn't have any validity. And this is how we paskin in Shulchan Aruch, Yerodeyasim and Reishman Tess. If a person comes with a dream and says, the money that your father buried in your backyard, that you didn't even know was there, but you only discovered because of the dream, that's the real chiddush over here. If the Baal HaChalom never came, I would never know the money was there in the first place. But he was right about the money, but he says that the money belongs to tzedakah. Ain't no klum. You could ignore that. But this would seem on the surface to contradict another din in Shulchan Aruch. Machaber teaches that if a person has a dream, and in this dream, they make a neder tzedakah, so there are different opinions. One opinion is that he does not require hataras nedarim. And there's another opinion, that he actually does require hataras nedarim. If a person has a dream that he took a neder tzedakah, he should absolve that neder. Similarly, the Machaber paskins that if a person has a dream that he was put in cheirem, that he was excommunicated, he also requires a certain atar, a release from that excommunication. So it seems like a contradiction over here of sorts. Why is it that the Mechaber Paskins, that when it comes to the guy who dreams of an inheritance and is told that money doesn't belong to you, that he can ignore that, but when it comes to the guy who dreams that he gave tzedakah or that he was put in cheirem, so then he can't. Why don't we say over there as well, the v'chalomos lomalin, v'lomaridin. So there are several answers to this question. The first one I'd like to share with you is from the Tashbetz. And he says, basically, listen, when you have a dream, you don't know what it means. There's no way of knowing, because as we said already, it's a suffix. There's a doubt that we have as to whether or not the dream is real or it's not. We just don't know when it comes to dreams, whether one dream is legitimate. It could be that it's just totally made up and it's nothing. It could be that it is significant. And so therefore, we have over here a classic case of suffix. So how do we deal with questions of suffix and halacha? So the answer is it depends what area of halacha it. When we're dealing with dinim mamonis, when we're dealing with something that has to do with money, so we have a general rule, and that is that the money remains with the muchzak. The person who is in possession of the money right now is considered api halacha to be the one who's legally entitled to this money until somebody else comes along with a raya, and somebody comes along with a very strong proof that the money belongs to him. And we have a principle, Hamos Mechaver Lo Varaya. So the fact of the matter is, this guy who digs in his backyard and he discovers a treasure chest full of gold, he's the muchzak. It was in his backyard. He's the one who right now has this money. It could be because of this dream he had that the money really belongs to somebody else. That somebody else has to bring a raya, has to bring a proof. So we're basically following the principle over here of Hamos Mechaver Lo Varaya. But he says it's different when it comes to the other cases. Because the other case is not a suffix of mamon, it's a suffix of iser. That's a different type of suffix. When it comes to, let's say, the guy who's put in cherem, so that you're talking over here about a suffix yisur, it's a little different. Well, let me ask you, what would be the halacha if, let's say, a person has a dream that the food in his refrigerator is not kosher? Bought a piece of chicken, somebody comes to dream and says it's not kosher. So that's a little bit of both. I mean, it's a suffix yisura, but it does have... He would experience a monetary loss, you know. Hopefully you don't dream dreams like that too often. If you do, please let me know. We'll talk it through. But the idea is that the suffix that is generated by a strange dream like this, in certain cases, we'll say lomalim lomaridin, because of the fact that we're dealing with din mamonis. In other cases, we may want to take a little more seriously and at least cover our bases by doing what's called a taras nedarim. Another possibility, which is explained in the Shuvah Shivas Tzil. This is actually a small quote from a longer tshuva, but I'm just going to say it outside because we're running out of time. He basically says that a nevuah, because we're talking over here about the possibility that a chalom, a dream, is 1/60th of a nevuah. A nevuah is a prophecy about something that will happen in the future. So if we're talking over here about a dream having meaning, a dream can only be considered relevant to the extent that it may give us a little bit of an idea of a foreshadowing of something that happened in the future. But that a dream should be megala on something that happened in the past, that's not something that we need to pay any attention to. That's where we say lo malam v'lo maridin. So it basically says the guy who dreams that he has a treasure in his backyard, and the Baal HaChalom comes and he tells him, And by the way, that treasure is not yours because the money was given to somebody else. So that's what we say that could be ignored because that's a dream that's going on something in the past. As opposed to if a person has a dream, let's say that he was put in cheirim or something like that. So there are consequences that going forward in the future. And so therefore, that has to be dealt with a little differently. The last issue that I want to sort of cover in our topic of dreams tonight is when it comes to dreams in Psak Halacha. What I mean by that is, to what extent, if at all, would we consider, would a posek, I should say, consider what he may have dreamt as being relevant when determining what the halacha should be? Now, I want to begin before I even share some fascinating sources with you by stating what should be obvious, and that is that poskim that I know don't poskim from their dreams. I haven't met poskim who poskim from their dreams. Poskim are responsible, learned, scholarly, experienced individuals who poskim from a place of knowledge and awareness and great intellectual and spiritual strength. But as you'll see in a moment, there's at least a possibility that dreams can have an influence of psak halacha. There's a fascinating tshuva over here from the Radbaz, who was a late Rishon, who was asked the following question. He was asked whether or not a person who had tefillin that we call Rabbeinu Tam tefillin. There's a machlokus between Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam as to what is the order of parshios on tefillin. According to Rashi, we follow the order that you find on the bottom of the screen. Kadesh, v'hayyaki v'achosh, v'hayin shma Yisrael. And according to Rabbeinu Tam, it follows a different sequence. Kadesh, v'hayyaki v'achosh are the same. But on the other side of the tefillin, Shema goes first, and then Vahaya im Shema. So two shitos in the Rishonim, Machlokas, Rashi, and Rabbeinu Tam, based on the Gemara Menachos. So the truth of the matter is, the Machlokas between Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam preceded Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam. It was an old Machlokas, but we call Rashi Rabbeinu Tam because they were some of the, there were two very famous Balei Plugta who argued on this question. So the question over here that he was asked is whether a person could take his Rabbeinu Tam tefillin and convert them into Rashi tefillin by essentially switching the order of the parshios. Is that something which is permissible or not? So he says, Avagav she'im bozat tzad pisul. He says, I don't really think that there should be a problem. It shouldn't invalidate the tefillin, because even according to Rabbeinu Tam, they have to be written in the same order. It's just how we put them in the batim. Mikem ukomi says, yesh b'davar isur mitzad she'mezalz b'chavad kol ba'al yisvar azu. But he says, still think it's wrong, because it's somewhat dismissive of those who hold a certain way to go ahead and take their tefillin and convert them into something else, which according to them is not good. So that he thought was wrong. It was inconsiderate. He said, Mikra Adin, I think it's mutter, but I don't think you should do it. He says, Vanina Shalti Alzeva Horesi Shadava Mutter. So when somebody asked me, I said, listen, it's mutter. Probably shouldn't do it, but it's mutter. At that night, he says, Ba'oso Laila, Hiruni Bachalomi, but I had a dream. And they told me, Shalo Horesi Yafe. They told me what I said was wrong. I did not rule properly. V'chazarti bi. And I changed my mind. And I looked into this and I realized later that this is a great zilzal. It's really not right to go ahead and paskin this way. So it's fascinating. The Radbaz basically paskin a certain way. And then he goes to sleep. And in his dream, they came to him and said, you were wrong. And we woke up. He thought about it more. He says, you know, that was wrong. Now, you could argue that over there, it's not so much the dream that made him change his mind, but In his dream, he realized on his own that maybe he made a mistake. And when he woke up, he thought about it more. And he realized, you know, I was wrong. Not that he was paying too much attention to the dream. But I'll give you another example where it's a lot more, I would say the dream is a lot more decisive than that. The Beis Yosef in Hilchos Lulav, Arachayim Simon Tav Reish Nun Aleph, talks about whether or not, what is the proper way to hold the Dalet Minim. So here you have several pictures over here of people holding Dalet Minim together. Meaning, the lulav obviously is tied with the hadassim and the ravos, and you have the esrog in the other hand. So normally, a person makes a bracha on the tilas lulav, when they fulfill the mitzvah of the nanuim, they hold them together. Where does this come from, holding it together? So the Beis Yosef points out that this idea of holding it together is not found in the Gemara, it's not found in the poskim, it's not found in the Rishonim. If you look in the Rambam, the Rosh to the Rif, you don't find it. Fascinating, because that's the way we do it. We all hold like this, but you don't find it there. Where does it come from? He quotes from the Rikanti in Parshas Emor, who says that the Esrog has to be connected together with the other three Minim, and you shouldn't separate them. He says, V'sod zeh nigla elai b'chalom. And where did I get this? I got it in a dream. On the first night of Sukkis, and he says specifically where he was, and he was a guest in somebody's house, and he has this dream. And in the dream, he's being basically shown that there was a separation of the Shem Hashem. There was a Yud-Kei-Vav, and then the Hey was separate, and he didn't understand what was going on. And then they told him, you just do the same thing. So the whole idea that he develops over here is that the Dalet Minim represent the four letters of Hashem's name, and by separating three Minim from the other one, it's like separating the Shemus of Hashem. So the letters of Hashem's name. So this is a very strange idea, but what's most fascinating about this is that something that I think we all do. I think if you go all over, you know, shuls all over Klal Yisrael, Sfaradim, Ashkenazim, everybody benches lulav that way. We hold it together. And where does it come from? As far as I can tell, the Beis Yosef says it comes from a dream. It comes from a dream. And finally, there's a fascinating set of tshuvas called the Shailos Tshuvas Min HaShemayim. This is written by one of the Balei Tosfos. One of the Balei Tosfos lived in France, had a set of tshuvos, a sefer, an entire sefer that was devoted to tshuvos, that were basically compiled from questions that people would ask him during the day, and then he would go to sleep, and in his dream he would ask. He had a chavrusa, a malach who would come and learn with him, and would ask what the halacha is, and he would wake up, and he would share what he was told by the malach. So here you have an entire sefer of piskei halacha that were shared with somebody in his dreams, which is really, really fascinating. I'll give you, just as we conclude, I'll give you one example. That the third, in Siman Gimel over here, he asked about the Seder Parshiyos of Tefillin. Remember, just a couple of minutes ago, we mentioned Machlokas Rashi Rabbeinu Tam. So he asked, what's the din? And remember, he was, I don't know if he was an actual contemporary, but he was living in the more or less, in the time period of Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam. And he asked the question, Ona melech hagodol agibar vanora chacham arazim megalin estaros magin alamo shomar brisva chesed. So he's appealing to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, tell me, is Hashem istabtu b'seder Parshiyos of Tefillin? There are those among our sages who say that Havayos be'emtza, that the two Vahayos should be be'emtza, v'ihim hichlif psulos, v'yishmei achachamim omer v'ayos kesidron, that you should follow the order that it's found in the Torah, v'im hichlif psulos. And he asks HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Malach, please tell me, lahudienu halacha k'divri mi, v'divri mi atam achaviv. So this is like, it's like a big, big question. And he goes to sleep and he asks the Malach, tell me, in his dream, tell me what the halacha is. The Shiva, and this was the answer that he got. Eilu v'yelu divilakim chayim. Both of them are true. Kimachlokas lamata, kach machlokas lamala. You have a machlokas down here in earth, they have the same machlokas up in heaven. HaKadosh Baruch Hu omer, havayos be'emtza, v'choma mayu shamala omer havayos kesidra. HaKadosh Baruch Hu paskin, so to speak, like Rabbeinu Tam, and the Pamal Shemala, the entire heavenly tribunal, the Bezdin Shemala, they paskin like Rashi. So it's fascinating. I find this to be absolutely fascinating. The entire concept that you can have a person who goes to sleep at night, and first of all, halavai, we should all have such holy dreams when we sleep at night. We should dream about Torah and such lofty topics. But to be able to maintain such thought and such comprehension that when a person goes to sleep at night and returns in the morning, wakes up in the morning, is able to sort of report, you know, here's what was shared with me. So this is obviously a very, very unusual type of connection. Here you have, I hope in the 45 minutes or so that we're learning together, a little bit of an overview about some of the many, many interesting and fascinating aspects of dreaming from a Torah perspective. Next week, at this time, we will talk about animals. Wow, that's wild. Torah perspectives on animals. And I look forward to sharing with you some very, very interesting ideas as we continue our demystifying series, Bezos Hashem, next week. Thank you so much for joining me, and have a wonderful night.